Parataya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaita Mritavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvam Anusantatami Bhagavad Gita Bhavadveshinim. Avibhaktanchaputeshu Vibhaktam Iva Chastitam Vibhaktam Iva Chastitam Puta Bharatra Chatadnyayam Puta Bharatra Chatadnyayam Grasishnu Prabha Vishnu Cha Grasishnu Prabha Vishnu Cha Avibhaktam Cha Bhuteshu Vibhaktam Iva Chastitam Bhuta Bhartra compound Bhuta Bhartra Chatat Nyayam Grasishnu Prabhavishnu Cha. So this cha and, because he's continuing on, really giving the unfoldment of this whole teaching in very succinct and complete form. So he says, avibhaktam, that which is avibhaktam, not divided, bhuteshu, in all beings, that which is not separated or divided in all beings, avibhaktam cha bhuteshu. Bhuteshu means in all beings or in all of the bhutas, all the things that exist. But bhuta, the mahabhutas are all of the subtle elements. So for bhutas, they can be all of the elements that exist, space, air, fire, water, earth, and also all the living beings. So all, you can say all beings. So that which is undivided in all beings, and vibhaktam eva chastitam, and that which being undivided, the stitta means existing being, that which being undivided in all beings, in all things, appears as though divided, vibhaktam eva, that eva means like or as though, or appears in this sense, that which is undivided in all beings, remains undivided, stitta remains undivided in all beings, and appears as though vibhaktam divided. That one, the one that the Brahman that we're talking about, tat nyam, the second line, bhuta bhartra cha tat nyam, that means that which is tat nyam, that which is to be known, that Brahman which is to be known, that is to be known as what? Bhuta bhartra, the one who sustains. Bhartra is the sustainer. Bhuta bhartra, the one who sustains all things, who sustains all things, all beings, but who sustains the bhuta, you can say the one who's the sustainer, who sustains all the bhutas, means who sustains the entire universe, bhuta bhartra, the one who is the sustainer of the entire universe, and grasishnu, the one who devours the entire universe, and Prabhavishnu, the one who creates the entire universe. So when we say Ishwara, you know, we look at Ishwara as Brahmaji, Vishnu, and Shiva. Brahmaji is Ishwara, or Brahman, which is Ishwara, as the creator. When the universe comes into manifestation, we say that Bhagavan, that Ishwara is Brahmaji. When the creation is remaining, is being sustained, say Vishnu. It's Ishwara as Vishnu. When the creation is resolved into unmanifest condition, that's Shiva. So these are really just aspects of Ishwara. So here, there's the whole Satyam Mityas brought out in this verse. First thing he uses, this is an often used example, Vyoma. Vyoma means space. So he says, And Shankara says, Tarekam, that which is one, Vyomavat, like space. Vyomavat, Tarekam, that which is one, like space. In Pratidehaṁ, in all the bodies, that which pervades all of the bodies, which, like space, pervades all of the bodies, or really you can say, you can extend it to that which pervades everything that is. But pervading all that is, or pervading all of the dehas, deha means body, so prati deha in the commentary, unfolding avibhaktam. Avibhaktam means that which is undivided. So he says, prati deham, in each body, in every deha, in each body, that which is one, like space. So, from the standpoint, so what is really the same in all beings, what all beings equally enjoy, like space, you know, so that which, that one has that nature of avibhaktam. But vibhaktam eva, but appears to be divided. So, we always use the example, like, if we're using space, the space appears to be divided, like room space, or Berkeley space, or San Francisco space, or pot space. Pot space is a good example, because if I think of a pot and I move the pot from point A to point B, the pot space can think, I'm moving from A to B. But actually the space doesn't move at all. And like that, your being, which is the being that you are, is the one being in all, the one being in all dehas, the being in all beings, the one self in all beings, that one is never moving. And so within dvaita, within duality, there's so much movement going on. You move from point A to point B. But is yourself, is the self, is the atma moving from point A to point B when your body, mind, sense organs moves to point A, from point A to point B? And so that's actually, in a walking meditation, if you can just totally relax your mind and just focus on your own presence. You can ask yourself, am I moving? The mind is moving, the body is moving, but is the self moving? And if your mind becomes relaxed enough and subtle enough, you can have that viveka, that in fact, your being is not moving at all. Your being is not walking down the road. I used to tell this story when I was in India at the first course. This was in the 70s. I had this...
Neuritis?
No, I did have neuritis, but I'm talking about this. I'm totally different than neuritis. This is another story. Don't open your mouth about any of these stories. Right? So, with this time, there's this long pathway that went from where Swamiji's Kutir, and then we had the girls' dorms, and then we had girls' dorms and Swamiji's Kutir, and then this long pathway that went down past the kitchen and then to the lecture hall. A beautiful pathway. It would go, you know, like a little tiny thin road, and it had the library on the side. It's very beautiful in Sandipani Sadnalaya in Powai, Bombay. So it's a beautiful ashram, really. And so as I was walking down on my way to class, for some reason, you know how once in a while your mind is just for no reason, really. It was just very quiet and subtle. And as I was walking, and I hadn't really realized my being at that time. I hadn't really gotten it in a real way. Okay, so here I'm walking, and then all of a sudden I realize I'm not moving. Mm-hmm. That the me, that myself, is not moving. And I couldn't believe it. And first of all, it was me. And this me that I am is just not moving at all. It's all the teaching says, you know, but the teaching says, and then that's one thing for it to say, but it's another thing for you to really see it. And so I remember that very vivid recognition. I just stopped in my tracks, because I saw it so clearly, But then I didn't want to lose it. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to lose what I was seeing. And so, and I remember some of my friends were way down at the end there, and I was stopped in my tracks, and I started going like this. You know, move your head like this. And I'd still, no, my head is moving, I'm not moving. Nothing is happening. And then very gently I went, no. And then still I was afraid that I was going to lose it. And so I very gingerly walked to see if that was true. You know, and it was true. It was true. You know, and I think that then after some time, the vividness of that recognition, you know, total viveka that was so clear, kind of faded. But what didn't fade was that the self that doesn't move, that is not attached to anything, is me. Because the viveka is this. The me that you take yourself to be right now is your body that gives you your personal me. This body, mind, sense organs. This is what makes me me. And then there's an Atma, you know. But what really makes me me is something to do with a combination of this body, mind, sense organs that makes the personal me that makes me me. And with that recognition, what you realize is that this personal me is Brahman. The me that you thought to be you because you had a body. Who cares about the other me self that they're talking about? The me that you take yourself to be is this body, mind, sense organs. That me was the me that didn't move. That was the me that if I turned my head, the self didn't turn. As I walked, the self didn't walk. And you just recognize the stability of it, the self in all beings. It's the very adhishtana, your personal me, is in fact Brahman. It's the adhishtana, it's the immovable, changeless self that all beings enjoy, that everything enjoys. And what is so amazing is that in that recognition, the personal Atma, when we say Atma, this is why the teaching is using the word Atma and Brahman, right, is very important. Because when we use the Atma, or even Pratyek Atma, your innermost self, that means you. Atma means you, like if I say I. So that I, you know. But the whole teaching is that this personal me, this Atma, the I, you know, is Brahman. Do you know what I mean? That's very hard to get because the Dehatma Buddhi is so much, the identification with the body is so much that the personal I, the me, is taken to be the body, and you think, people think, until they don't think this anymore, they think that the Atma that we're talking about is something that itself has to be realized. The Atma is not here now, it's something special to be realized. You know, and then we can, once we realize that special Atma, then we can realize that that Atma is Brahman. But there's this distance between the Atma and the self that I take myself to be. So you dismiss, you know that the self you take yourself to be, which is the most, the thing that you are the most attached to, that body, mind, sense organs has to realize an innermost Atma, have an experience of that innermost Atma, which then you'll recognize, then you can recognize that innermost Atma is Brahman. But what has to be seen, you know, is that the Atma that you take yourself to be right now, it is that one that in fact is free. That is not attached to the body. When the body drops, that self remains. When the dream drops, that self remains. When any thought comes and goes, that self remains. When you're walking, it doesn't walk. When you're talking, it doesn't talk. When you're hearing, it doesn't hear. When you're blinking, it uses blinking. When you're blinking, it doesn't blink. So when you're blinking, you're not blinking. When you're hearing, so that's this is words, right? When you're hearing, you're not hearing. When you are hearing, you are not hearing. When you are seeing, you are not seeing. To understand that this, you have to understand the satyam mityam. That's why this clay pot, it's like the pot is the clay, right? But the clay is not the pot. And so when your eyes, which are you, are seeing, that's the mitya eyes, when they are seeing, yourself, conscious being, consciousness, is not seeing. The eyes are seeing because that's the eyes are an instrument which allows you to see. But when the eyes are seeing, that enjoy you as their self, the self itself is not seeing. So A is B, but B is not A, right? The eyes enjoy the conscious being, me, but I am free of the eyes. But you have to understand that. Otherwise, there's a disconnect there. And so here, when they're saying this, there's really like a, in a sense, a Mahavakya here. This yourself, which is undivided. If the self, the me, is undivided, the me that I am is the me of all beings. Because it's undivided. There aren't separate selves. There's only one me. So this undivided self appears as though divided from the standpoint of the upadis, from the standpoint of the conditioning adjuncts. So I, being one, changeless, free of any type of motion, being totally undivided, from the standpoint of the body, mind, sense organs, I appear as though divided. That's satyam mitya. And it is that one that is undivided, who appears as though divided, is the very self, the very being, that he calls bhutabhartra. It's the self of all beings. It's the one that sustains all beings, that sustains the creation. Sustains means adhishtana. When we use this term sustaining, you have to be careful because you can get into a duality, a dvaita there. So when we use this word, it sustains as adhishtana. Adhishtana is the truth of mitya. If we use this word, adhishtana, it's a technical term which means that which is actually there, which the mitya, whatever is mitya, enjoys for its being. So the adhishtana is the self or the truth of whatever is mitya. So the clay is the adhishtana of the pot. The rope is the adhishtana of the snake. The conscious being, existence itself, is the adhishtana of the whole appearance of duality. And so this self, as the bhutabhartra, the atma, is the one that sustains Vishnu, the one who sustains the creation when the creation is here. Now, this is another thing. When we say Ishwara or Vishnu is the sustainer, Brahmaji is the creator. We say Brahman actually, as the one who is actually there, Brahman is Ishwara. Brahman is Vishnu. Brahman is Brahmaji. Brahman is Shiva. Because Brahman is what is actually here, right? And so Brahman, from Brahman's standpoint, just the standpoint of conscious being, from that standpoint, there is no creation. It's just consciousness. Mitya doesn't add anything to consciousness. Mitya has no being of its own. From the standpoint of Brahman, there's only Brahman. It's like the clay saying, there's nothing here but clay. You're talking about a pot, but really it's just me. There's nothing here but clay. So I could say, as speaking from the standpoint of me, of the conscious being, there's nothing here but consciousness. That's it. Only consciousness. But then there's this creation. This creation is nothing but consciousness. But when we're talking about it from the standpoint of the creation, there's all this manifest duality. But every object within the creation is like the clay pot. It has for its being only Brahman. There's nothing else there, really, except for Brahman. And so it's, if you take Brahman, the consciousness as the only, this me, as all that is, the only thing that is, then this, what we call Maya, has no place to go. But remember that it's from Maya, and if the creation comes into manifestation, is sustained and goes, you know, into dissolution, what is its adhishtana? So the adhishtana, what is actually there, is Brahman. And so where does Maya exist? Well, first of all, it is a problem to categorize Maya as something which is existent. That's why the definition of Maya is sadasad bhyam anirvachaniya. Or if we just take the word Maya, it's yama iti Maya. That which is not, that is Maya. Which is a twist of words, right? That which is not, that which is not. Means this Maya is enjoying being, but cannot be categorized as satyam, as Brahman, that which exists in all three periods of time, that can't be negated. And you can't say that it's non-existent. That's mithya. You can't say that it exists, and you can't say that it doesn't exist. And so, well, that's why sometimes Maya itself, in the language, and just, you know, daily layman's speech, Maya means magic. You know, and the Mayavi, which Ishwara is sometimes called the Mayavi, is the word for a magician. And the Mayavi uses his Maya, you know, to throw a rope up into the sky. They use that example. He'll throw a rope up into the sky, climb up to the top of the rope, cut the rope in little pieces, and jump down. So it's all, you know, a projection. And so sometimes Ishwara is called the Maha Mayavi, the great Mayavi. Because this creation, right, comes from nothing, is sustained by nothing, and resolves into nothing from its own standpoint. But if you talk about where it really comes from, it comes from Brahman, is sustained by Brahman, and resolves into Brahman. But Brahman itself doesn't go in through any type of activity to do that. And so Brahman itself must have this Maya. So, which as innate or as a, what is Swamiji uses this term now? I'll think of it later. As a mithya adjunct, you know, as a mithya quality, incidental quality, he calls it. Incidental, that's a new thing. Incidental. Incidental means it's a quality, incidental attribute. He's now using that. They're called Maya as an incidental attribute of Brahman. Incidental means that it doesn't do anything to the substance. Like we could say it's a mithya attribute. Because we have no place to put it. There is nothing but Brahman. From Maya comes all time and space and duality. And so where does Maya exist? Well, first of all, Maya has no being other than Brahman. Right? And so you can say, well, Maya is a mithya attribute of Brahman. And so from Brahman, Brahman is what sustains Maya, is the sustains Maya, and everything that projects from Maya. Just like you are the, in terms of your dream or your imagination, you're the Bhutabhartra. You are the one who's sustaining the very being, the very self, the conscious being, from which the whole imaginal creation comes. You're the one who is there as the sustaining being of that. So like that, Brahman is the sustainer of the entire creation. But once we bring in creation, you're bringing in Maya. Right? But Maya is not apart from Brahman. You know, it's not like Maya exists somewhere else or has its own being. So Maya is Brahman, right? But to say Maya is Brahman, you have to do the satyam mithya. Maya is Brahman, but Brahman is free of Maya. That's why another thing that we talk about here is that Brahman, the self, is the material cause of all of this, itself not going through any change. Mm-hmm. We have this important word, actually, for material cause, we have upadana karana. That's like the clay is the upadana karana for the pot. You say Brahman is the upadana karana for this creation. It is the actual substance, what is actually here. But it's the vivarta upadana karana. Vivarta means the material cause which undergoes no change to become the creation. Just like conscious being undergoes no change, you know, to become an imaginal world or to become a dream. It is the upadana karana of the dream. If you have a dream, right, the conscious being that allows the dream to be and to be known is the vivarta upadana karana of the dream. That's when you wake up from the dream, that upadana karana, the consciousness, the conscious existence, is not touched at all. So when this creation comes into manifestation, is sustained, and then resolves, the Brahman, the self, is not touched at all because it's vivarta. It undergoes no change to become anything because it itself is advaita. It's free from any type of duality. The only duality that is experienceable, that exists, is within Maya. Just like when you dream and you project an imagination, the duality of the imagination exists within the imagination. Right? Say you have a dream. The duality that is experienced exists within the dream, or within the projection, or within this universe. If you withdraw the universe, it's not that space remains. Space, air, fire, water, earth are the elements, really, of the projection. So you have the elements and the elementals that are projected. When you bring that projection into unmanifest condition, time and space become unmanifest. You know, if time and space themselves become unmanifest, then from the standpoint of Brahman, right, Brahman can't be discussed or thought about in terms of time and space. It's not there's a big Brahman or a little Brahman. It's that there is only Brahman. Right? That is the difference here. Time and space and dimension and duality all exist in the creation. When the creation goes into unmanifest condition, then time and space and duality and objectivity, all the qualitative differences, those are completely gone. Mm. If those are gone, then how big or small is Brahman? You know, what color is Brahman? Oh, how high is Brahman? How smart is Brahman? All these things are totally meaningless. It's really important. There's many reasons why this is important to understand, because when you think of Ishvara, you think of something big. Mm-hmm. You know, if we look at Ishvara as the one to whom the entire creation is known, this huge, infinite creation.
Huge powers.
Yeah, almighty, omniscient, omnipotent. The one omniscient, because the whole manifest creation on every level, every dimension, is known because of the sattva that goes, this is from the Shruti, the sattva that goes through the entire creation, just like your mind is sattva, whatever thought you have in your mind, that is known. So sattva pervades the entire creation. When the creation is manifest, it is known. So now that is big. That would be like an infinite vritti, right? An infinite manifestation of knowledge, which as in spatially infinite. You're not spatially infinite. Your mind is not spatially infinite. Your knowledge is not spatially infinite, but your mind is not spatially infinite, right? And so how can you can see how you can be a part of Brahman, if we're looking at the Atma, this innermost self. You can see, I can see how this innermost self is a part of Brahman, but it can't be the whole Brahman because I'm not as big as Brahman. See what I mean? This is a confusion that happens. Whereas when yourself, the conscious being that you are, this me, is not big or small, because that which isn't objectified and which is even the self from which space comes, you know, has no separate dimension. And so the me that you are is the me that Brahman is the me that Ishwar enjoys. But Ishwar enjoys the self that we call Brahman, and that Brahman, that self, which is Ishwar's self, is yourself. It's not that yourself is part of Ishwar's self. Yourself is Ishwar's self. You have to understand it like if you have a dream and there's the little beings in the dream and then there's the dream itself. The whole thing enjoys one non-dual self. And so the self that I am is really the Bhuta Bhartra. It's the self that is the being which the entire creation enjoys. And it is the being which sustains the creation, which projects the creation into which the creation comes. And so what this means is that this me, you enjoy Brahman, the self that you are, is not big or small. It is the self that is. You know, it is the self that is. There's not a bigger self, there's not a smaller self, there's only one self. That self doesn't have dimension. It can't be divided. It is just one without a second. All these things about dimension and all of this go away. You get rid of space. What is left is just what is. There's not an end to it. But see, when you think of an end to it, dimension comes in. When you think of non-dual, somebody once called it as an infinite point. It's kind of interesting. You think of your being as an infinite point. It's an interesting meditation, actually. You are not spatial. Your being is not spatial, but from the standpoint of space, everything enjoys you. That's the satyamitya. From your standpoint, you're not spatial. You just simply are. You are like an infinite point that actually kind of works. But from the standpoint of the creation, which has dimension, there is nothing in the creation that is away from your being. And so both, you can recognize this. You can recognize this right now, in fact. Your presence, which doesn't, your being, which doesn't answer to big or large or tall or short, it doesn't answer to these things. These things are totally irrelevant to you, to your being. And it's also true that there is no experience. In your experience, there's nothing that's away from Sat-Chit, your being. So this kind of this is not understandable without understanding Satyamitya. A is B, but B is not A. If A is B, then all that this Mitya, the Maya that you experience, has me for its being. But if I am free of the Maya, then I'm also free of all of the characteristics of Maya. I'm free from time, I'm free from dimension, I'm free from any type of quality, I'm free from any type of change. And so since this is you, we're talking about an actual recognition of the reality that is here, the mind has to be pointed in the direction to wake up to this type of viveka. So here, we're going to go to the next verse. Let me just put this, capsulize this, where it says, the you who are Brahman, are non-divisible. There is no division at all in you. And yet, from the standpoint of this creation, you appear as though divided. I am different from you. I, this conscious being, am different from you, this conscious being. I, this existent being, am different from the existent rug, or the existent painting, or the existent space. We see nothing but duality, but what is the thing is that all of the duality that we experience is and is known. It is and it is known. If the total duality that we experience goes away, what is left is and is known. Is, which is known. That is me. That is Brahman. Mm. I am left. I am and I am known. I am and I am self-evident. Now with this creation is and it is known. We think it's numbed because I have eyes and then I have a mind, which is all true. That's how, as a jiva, I'm participating in the creation. I'm a seer and a hearer, etc. But there's a common denominator of everything that I perceive being known, existing and being known, and the eyes that are doing the seeing are existing, and they also are known. And the mind, which is taking the information from the eyes, it also is and is known. And in the end, the is and the is known is just the Satchit conscious being itself, that is Brahman. And so that conscious being is the bottom line, right? With the mind is known. With the sense organs are known. Using the sense organs as an instrument, these perceptions are known. But actually, the is-knownness is the adhishtana of what is actually there. Every experience you have, even when you have a dream experience, it is and it is known. You get rid of the dream, it is and it is known. You can say, I am and I am known. You have the dream, it is known. Get rid of the dream, I am and I am known. So that amness and knownness never goes away. That is the adhishtana of all experience. Okay, so let's go. And so it says in that one, that is that adhishtana, which itself is indivisible, it is that Brahman from which the whole creation comes, is sustained, and resolves. Right? That's where the Bhuta Bhartra is the one who sustains the whole creation. The Sishnu is the one who devours the whole creation. It all comes back into the adhishtana, back into the material cause. And it is the Prabhavishnu. Prabhavishnu means the one from whom the whole thing comes. So let's, he goes on. So, Jyotisham apitat jyotihi. Jyotisham apitat jyotihi. Tamasav paramuchate. Tamasav paramuchate. Jnanam yeyam jnanagamyam. Jnanam yeyam jnanagamyam. Riddhisarvasya vishtitam. Jyotisham api tet jyotihi. Tamasaha param uchate. Jnanam yeyam jnanagamyam hridi sarvasya vishtitam. Shankar brings in a doubt in his introduction, and he's in his introduction to this verse, and he says, everywhere, even though the Sat being is existing everywhere, na upalabhyate, if it isn't known, then that which is to be known, then it is it tamas, is it darkness? Because it's not known, if something is not known, is it dark? Is it tamas? Is it covered with darkness? And so that's just a question to lead into the verse. And so Shankar says, no, it's not. Then kin, it's not tamas, it's not darkness. He says, kin tarhi, what then? What then is it? And he says, so the verse goes, Jyotisham api, of all the luminaries, Jyotish means luminaries, like the sun. You know, like the sun, the stars, the fire, all luminaries. Even of all of the luminaries, including the Aditya, including the sun, that which is the luminary. That one is the luminary, that Brahman is the luminary, even of all of the luminaries, that Brahman is the luminary of all of the luminaries. Tamasaha param uchate, and that Brahman is beyond tamas, is beyond darkness. It's the luminary of all luminaries, and it itself is param, here means beyond tamasaha, beyond tamas, beyond darkness. He says, jnanam jnayam jnanagamyam hridi sarvasya vishtitam. He says, jnanam here, We have to go back. We have to remember this whole verses that we have. Let me just look here. Yeah. Like Jnanam, if you remember, we went, first of all, into the Amanitvam, Adambitvam, Ahimsa, Kshanti, Arjitvam, all of these qualities. Those are called Jnanam. Here, Jnanam means that by which something is known. And so the mind has to enjoy the Amanitvam qualities, all the qualities that we went through, to have the Antakarna Shuddhi, that Shanti, to be able to enjoy the Shanti, the relative Shanti, relative peace, that can be present to this knowledge. Sometimes Antakarna Shuddhi gets misunderstood as something unreachable. Like a pure mind. What is a pure mind? It's as though that we have to excel to some blissful state where then we can say we have Antakarna Shuddhi, a pure mind. But here, really, when we're talking about Antakarna Shuddhi, this purity of mind, we're talking about a mind which is capable of gaining this knowledge. The mind needs enough shanti, enough equipoise, to be present to this teaching, because, first of all, if that type of shanti, if there isn't a sufficient amount of shanti there, you know, your mind probably wouldn't have any interest in this teaching, first of all. It's too busy with the raga dveshas, with the likes and dislikes, and the things that need to be accomplished. It doesn't have time to settle down to even reflect on what might really be going on here. It's too busy. And so, the mumukshutvam most likely isn't there, but then, at all. And it would be very boring, painfully boring, actually, to try to sit through a class. The other thing, though, is that when you have a relative shanti, but not quite enough, what you can find is when you're sitting in class and when these words are all rippling through, your mind doesn't have what we call the samadhanam. Samadhanam means just the ability to focus. Focus, sometimes you think of tension. A focus that is not tense. To be able to have the mind have a state of relaxation where it can just listen. So that these words can be flowing in and the mind is seeing what the words are talking about. That's that one thing so important to understand about Vedanta as a pramana for the direct, immediate recognition of yourself. Pramana means knowledge. The Upanishads are a pramana for the immediate recognition of yourself. The reason is that yourself is here. The self that the Vedanta is talking about is the self that you are. So you are present. We're not looking at some other self. We're talking about the you that is right here, right now. And so that self is here, you know, situated in the midst of this dual creation. Your being is situated in the midst of Maya, right? And so Maya, this whole creation that includes your body, mind, sense organs, is in no way separate or distant from the self. It's not that Maya is over here and the self is over here. The self is here and Maya is here. So it's kind of like warp and woof. It's not like the self has its own little place to be and the Maya has its own little safe place to be. So Maya is here, the self is here. That's why viveka is necessary. It's a red hot iron ball situation. It's the Hamsa bird situation. You know the famous story of the Hamsa bird. It goes and it sits on that bird bath, and there's a combination of milk and water, half milk, half water, filling the bird bath. The Hamsa bird goes and puts his little beak and sucks out the milk, leaving behind the water. There is no separation between the water and the milk. So it takes a lot of viveka. Yeah, same red hot iron ball. Another red hot. There's no separation. There's a mutual superimposition. You know where fire becomes round and heavy, You know, and iron becomes red and hot. It takes viveka to know here's the iron, here's the fire. Here, conscious being is not separate from the duality that we experience. Right? And so the viveka, and at the same time, there's a difference in the order of reality. Conscious being is satyam. The conscious being that I am is satyam. Satyam means it's not objectifiable, it's not subject to any kind of change whatsoever. It's not subject to birth and death, it's not subject to change. So that is a clue. In your experience right now, your being is satyam. You're not changing at all. Not at all. Nothing is covering you either. So the you that you are, who you are, now just has to be discerned and differentiated from the maya, which is always changing, which is always coming into being and going out of being. It's all subject on every level to subject to birth and death. Subject to change on every level. Both are existing in the same place at the same time. One is not changing and non-objectifiable, and one is nothing but change and sense. These are very different, right? And so what is subject to change coming into being and going out of being also doesn't have any being of its own because it's bordered by non-existence. So the being it has is the being that is there, which is me. And so what has to happen is a viveka, you know, a very fine viveka has to take place that allows me to recognize myself. Now that requires some teaching, because any mirror I bring up is just going to see my face. Anything I think about is just a product of my mind. And so my mind and my sense organs and all the reflecting devices I have are only good within duality. They're not good for revealing to me what is the self of all duality. Of all duality, not just one thing. If it was one thing, it would exist within duality. But it's the very being that is me and the self of all beings, non-objectifiable. And so the Upanishads are a teaching methodology to guide the mind, to direct the mind to recognizing this. The recognition isn't away. The recognition is right here, right now. Your very being, your experience. So for the mind to be able to see that, it has to have some shanti, quite a bit of shanti actually, because if the mind is running around thinking about this and thinking about that, it itself is very engaged in duality. That's what's filling it. This thought and that thought and this thought and this thought, this imagination, what am I going to do, what am I going to do, so it's all very busy. Lost really within the maya itself. If it needs to settle down, and the mumukshutvam is very helpful for that, because the mumukshutvam means that, with the viveka and vairagya, those qualities, means the student has realized that there's something you really have to know. Mm-hmm. There's something you have to know, because this isn't going to work. Mm-hmm. It's not just, for a mumukshu, it's not just that this isn't working to make me whole and complete. That's not enough. Because if you think, oh, this isn't working, then I should do this and this and this, and then that will work. No. It's recognizing that by the very nature of duality, the very nature of the body, the mind, the sense organs, all perceptions, all beings, there is nothing permanent to rely on at all, on any level. And so I can't solve this problem. Everything becomes what we call a dukkha yoni. It's just a womb for suffering, because any moment of happiness will come to an end. The fact that, and the thing is, for mumukshu, you realize that. That's one of your, anybody realizes it in a sense. It's kind of that blocked sadness that comes with any moment of happiness. It's just this underlying sadness that you don't want to think about. And the underlying sadness is that this is going to come to an end. What makes a mumukshu is the recognition of the inevitability of that in all situations, that there aren't any exceptions. And so then you become somebody who wants to know. And then when when exposed to like the Upanishad or this teaching, it is moving directly into the solution to this problem, which catches the mumukshu's attention. Now they use the example of, you know, what is a mumukshu like? Well, it's like how somebody who has whose hair is on fire, how they would go toward the lake. If your hair is on fire and you see a lake there, you're not going to saunter. So a mumukshu, when they're exposed to this teaching, you know, their mind is ready. They want that. And so they enjoy that shanti, you know. That mumukshutvam also takes care of a lot of these raga dveshas, the viveka, vairagya, the likes and dislikes. It's hard to have really an investment in something that you know is not going to be the answer. The investment changes. It becomes like a mithya investment. It's not really what you're looking for. And so that shanti comes naturally to a certain degree for the mumukshu. And so it's that shanti that is being discussed here as jnanam with these amanitvam qualities. And also the viveka, vairagya, shamadhamma, upadhitiksha, shraddha, samadhanam, mumukshutvam, the sadhana, chatushtya, these group of qualities. They all have to do with the shanti that allows the mind a certain relative stability so that this knowledge can do its job. Because you are present, the mithya maya is present, but now your mind has to be present. The self is present, the maya is present. Now is your mind present, you know, available to for the teaching to point that out? That's really what it is. Is your mind present so the teaching can point this stuff out? Yeah. And it's not used to being present in this way. If anything, if it's used to being present, it's used to being present on something. Now we want it to be quiet and then to be learn to be present in a very different way. You know, because the self that you are is not out there. The self that you are, right, is the one who's here right now but non-objectifiable. The mind has nishraddha, a certain faith pending understanding, it's considered some grace, and enough shanti to be able to get it. So the jnanam is a mind that enjoys that antakarana shuddhi, amanitvama, dambitvama, ahimsa, all of these qualities are useful. If you have all of those qualities that they go through, then the mind enjoys a certain shanti that makes it available. So that jnana, if that jnanam is there, the manitvam qualities is there, the jnayam is Brahman, the self which is to be known. So the jnanam, the qualities, the jnayam, the self which is to be known, and the jnanagamyam. Jnanagamyam means the reaching that knowledge, the gain of that knowledge, of that jnayam, that knowledge which is to be known. What they say here is hridi sarvasya vishtitam. All three of these, you know, all three are abiding in one's buddhi in this very particular way. Because the self, which is to be known, is already there. The self is already there. For the one who gains that knowledge of the self, that gain takes place in the buddhi also. So the Brahman is there, the self is there, what is to be known is there. Then when that which is to be known is known, that is also there. The mind which has these qualities, all of those things are there also. So that Brahman, the Brahman which is to be known, which the wise person recognizes, and which the means of knowledge also is there in the buddhi in terms of those qualities, all of those things are resting in the heart there of all beings. And so that one who is to be known is the light of all lights and is itself beyond darkness. Let me just say a couple of words about that before we stop. We say it's the light of all of the luminaries. Brahman is the light of all of the luminaries, or the self is the light of all of the luminaries. We say why we use this luminaries is like even this lamp. For me to appreciate the light of the lamp, I don't need to bring in another lamp. It's a luminary, okay? Whereas I need to bring in the lamp to see this cup, right? I don't need to bring in a lamp to see the lamp, because it's already the light. But I need the light in order to see something that is not a luminary. Understand? Like, this isn't self-luminous like the lamp is. But without my eyes, even though the light or even the sun or the stars or the fire or just the light is there, without the light of my eyes, I can't see it. They're not illumined. I need the light of my eyes to illumine the light which illumines the non-luminous objects. But without the light of my eyes, I can't. The luminous objects themselves are not lit up. See what I mean? Swamiji does this nicely in his commentary here. Without my mind using my eyes, you know, like if I'm looking at this light with my eyes and my mind is daydreaming, then my eyes are not lit up to light up the light. If my eyes can be open, you know, but if I'm thinking about something else, I'm with what I'm thinking about, not with my sense organs. My sense organs aren't functioning at that time. And so the luminary, the eyes also need to be illumined, and the mind illumines the eyes. But then if I don't illumine the mind, whatever is in the mind also is not illumined. So the mind also is known, and also the mind itself is not a luminary in the sense that the vrittis are changing one by one by one. And whatever vritti is there, whatever thought modification is there, that thought modification is illumined, that vritti goes, the next thought modification is illumined. And so the mind itself is not the luminary. So who is the luminary ultimately? Is the luminary of all luminaries. The luminary because of which all luminaries are lit up. So that on one level, the mind is a luminary. On another level, the sense organs are a luminary. On another level, all of the aditya, the all of the different suns, and the fire, and the moon, anything that sheds light is a luminary. But in the end, all of those luminaries are in the dark, without the ultimate luminary of Brahman. And that luminary, this luminary of consciousness itself, is something that is beyond all darkness. For consciousness, there is no darkness. Because consciousness illumines darkness. Consciousness is the light because of which light and darkness are known. Just on a physical level, but consciousness is also the light because of which knowledge and ignorance are known. I know what I know, I illumine what I know, and I illumine what I don't know. So I can ask you, you know, do you know Chinese? Oh, no, I don't know Chinese, you know. Have you ever been to, you know, Timbuktu? No, I've heard about Timbuktu, but I've never been there. No, I don't know that. Do you know this? No, I don't know that. Do you know this? Yes, I do know that. Well, consciousness illumines the ignorance as well as knowledge. Interesting to understand this in terms of deep sleep also. Consciousness illumines deep sleep. Consciousness doesn't go to sleep. Right? Consciousness has no other condition other than just being consciousness. So is it in the mind is an unmanifest condition like deep sleep. Consciousness illumines deep sleep. That's why when the vrittis wake up, when the mind wakes up in manifest condition, then that mind talks about the prior condition which was illumined by consciousness, right? That prior condition is known. When the mind is in unmanifest condition, it's in deep sleep, there's no one to comment on that condition because the mind is in causal state. So it, at that time, it's not capable of saying, I'm in deep sleep. But when the mind wakes up, then the mind says, oh, you know, I had the greatest sleep. Nothing was happened. I slept very well. I didn't know one thing. It describes the condition, which was illumined by consciousness. You can describe... It's not that different from the waker describing the there's not that much difference, really, if you think about it, between your description of the deep sleep state and the dream state. In either case, you're describing a state. In the dream state, you're describing all of this activity. Oh, I took on this body and I was living in this city and there was so-and-so in the dream, this and that. All happened in the dream. It's not happening now. It happened in the dream. You're describing it thoroughly. And then I went to sleep, and in that condition, there is no duality. There's no subject. There's no object. I'm just totally with myself with nothing happening. I don't know anything at all. It's the difference of two descriptions of two different states. One's the dream state, one's the deep sleep state. And now you're in the waking state. And now you're describing the waking state. You know, it feels different to describe the waking state than it does to describe the dream state and the deep sleep state. We look at more similarity between the waking state and the dream state than the deep sleep state, and in a way that's true, because there's subject-object duality in these two experiences. But these two experiences are quite different from each other. They're very similar in the sense of dual world. But when I'm a waker describing the dream situation, I'm describing an experience that was there. When I'm describing the deep sleep, I'm also describing an experience which was there, which was free from time and space, where there's a big, that's described in the Shastras, it's a big I don't know, without the words, Ajnanam, Tamas. I'm bringing this up because here they say, you know, what they're using as an example, the one who is beyond darkness, beyond ignorance, free of darkness, free from ignorance, consciousness never goes to sleep. It never changes its condition. It is the ultimate luminary because of which all other things are illumined. By luminary, they don't mean a light like the sun. They mean that because of which all of these things are known, consciousness. Consciousness is the luminary. See what I mean? Because of consciousness, the sun is known. Because of consciousness, the sense organs are known. The mind is known. Because of consciousness is known, not as a subject-object relationship, but because it is luminous. Like the sun is known, not because somebody is, the sun is luminous, not because somebody is illumining it, but because that's its nature. Consciousness is luminous because consciousness is its nature. See what I mean? And so that light of lights is that which is beyond darkness. And that one, that light of lights, is what is abiding in its own peculiar way. Vishtitam means it's abiding in its own special way in the heart of all beings, in its own special way, because it is the light of lights. It itself cannot be objectified. It is free from change. You know, it doesn't go through any modification at all, sitting there abiding in the mind. All of the vrittis that are going through the mind, it's abiding there, non-objectifiable and changeless as the light of all lights. The very being, the conscious being that you are, because of which all experiences are lit up. It's the light because of which all experiences are lit up. Itself not going through any modification at all. So you are, your being, the being that you are, is the being that is abiding there, is the one being that is abiding there, in the hearts, in the heart of all beings, in the buddhi of all beings. Okay, let's stop. Purnamidam, Purnamidam, Purnat, Purnamudachyate, Purnasya Purnamadaya, Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha. Harihi Om.
God, could you use the word clarity too, instead of light, of light?
Not really, because the thing is, the word clarity doesn't have a sense of luminosity. It has a sense, usually if we use the word clarity, we're using it in the sense of clarity of understanding. You know? That there's no vagueness or doubt in the understanding. But usually if we're just using the word clarity, almost like a metaphor for consciousness, clarity won't work. Or luminosity or light will work. Because light lights things up, like consciousness lights things up. But we wouldn't say light is clarity. We'd say, you know, the clarity that the light enjoys means it's free from any type of doubt or confusion. That's what I would think.
Cool. I have a question about, so Brahman doesn't see, or there was something about it
Brahman
sees
doesn't
but it
see.
Doesn't see, or something like that.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah,
it sees but it doesn't see. It sees from the standpoint of the upadi. From the standpoint of the eyes, it sees.
Mm-hmm.
But from the standpoint of consciousness, it doesn't, it's free of the eyes.
It's free of the eyes, but it experiences what Maya in some way, right? Doesn't?
Not from the standpoint of a conscious, no. Because it's only from the standpoint of Maya. Remember, Maya's not away from Brahman.
Right.
But it has the satya-mitya relationship. So think of it like this. Even for you, from the standpoint of this body, as long as you have eyes, you can see. But if you're blinded, for any reason, you know, if you're blinded, then you are, but you can't see. That's the same with your mind. Like, your mind can think, but without your mind, you can't think. The thinking capacity belongs to the mind, not to the consciousness that illumines the mind. And so from the standpoint of consciousness, there's no thinking. There's no seeing. There's no hearing. It's only from the standpoint of the mitya, like the maya ears and the maya mind.
It doesn't have access to all the stuff that's going on?
You have to think of it like this, that the maya itself, which is mitya, is not apart from Brahman. It's not like, oh, poor Brahman. Maya gets all of this and Brahman doesn't get anything. Maya is not away from Brahman. Maya, that's why Swamiji calls incidental attribute. It's like, what if you looked at yourself and you say, well, the eyes are an incidental attribute because without the eyes I can be, right? And then you can say, oh, well, poor you. Without your eyes you can't see. Do you understand? Like, what if I say, poor Brahman, without Maya, there's no experience of the creation. But Maya is the experience of the creation. It's like, what if you say, without your imagination, there's no experience of the imagination. What if I ask you, imagine a meadow, okay? And you imagine this beautiful meadow. And then I say, okay, stop that imagination. Now there's no experience of the meadow. Right? You only have the experience of the meadow when you have the experience of the meadow. You only have the experience of the creation when the creation is up to be experienced.
But it is experienced by the self when it's up.
Well,
when Maya is producing whatever it's producing.
Well, when you say it's experienced by the self from the standpoint of the Maya, it's experienced, but the self is not the knower. It's just, it is conscious being.
Is it dumb? And I don't, I mean, they're not saying that facetiously. I mean, is it just some kind of, like, I mean, it would seem that it would be aware of everything.
Like a giant knower. It is aware of everything. It is aware of, look at one, okay, a couple of things here. First of all, if consciousness is a knower, then I should be aware, I should be omniscient. If that conscious being is me. If consciousness is a knower, there's only one consciousness, then I, because I am that consciousness, I should be omniscient. I'm not omniscient. And I should also know everything you know. If the knowership belongs to consciousness itself. But it doesn't. It belongs, there is omniscience. Because the whole manifestation of the creation is like an infinite mind. It's like a manifestation of infinite knowledge, and that whole infinite creation is known. That's what we call Ishvara. Brahman, with looking at Brahman with the Maya Upadi, you know, with the Maya, that is what we call Ishvara. And so when Ishvara comes into manifestation, that's, and remember that Ishvara, the self of Ishvara, is only Brahman, right? So Brahman, with this creative capacity that we call Maya, when it comes into manifestation, it, you know, comes into manifestation, it is known. Just like when you wake up and your mind is awake, your mind is known. When the mind is in unmanifest condition, it's not known. There's no knowership in deep sleep, right? Because the what is necessary for knowership is an unmanifest condition. There's no subject-object relationship. But on the other hand, it's not like the self is dumb. It's not, dumb would be kind of like it is inert. The self is not inert. You are conscious being, the conscious being which the whole creation enjoys.
Is it passive?
It's changeless. It's not passive. If you say passive or active, then passive means, what does passive mean to you? It's not doing anything.
Just not active. Yeah, that's what the sense
it's is. Not active, but if you think of not active in terms of duality of passive and active, then I would say it is the self of passive and active. It's the non-objectifiable being of all that is passive and all that is active. Because these terms are terms that exist within duality, and they are juxtaposed next to each other. And they're opposites. And the self is the self of both of the opposites. It's the self of the passive and it's the self of the active.
So it's an analysis of the subject, which is qualities are not like the objects.
The quality, you'd have to say that the self doesn't have qualities. It is consciousness, which is existence. So it doesn't have, it's not like there's something there that has consciousness and existence. Consciousness is existence. So your being right now, the me that you are, you are a conscious, existent being. You enjoy amness. I am, I exist. The bottom line is, if I got rid of the whole creation, the existent being that I am, would be self-evident, as it is now. You are self-evident right now, and the whole creation that you experience, in fact, is self-evident after you. That the knownness of the creation is, in fact, your knownness.
And there would be no loss.
There's no loss in the sense that if you wake up from a dream, how there's no loss, because what was actually there has not changed. Right now, what is actually here, the being that is actually here, can't go away. That's the Satchit, that is Brahman. See, the Satyam Mithya, understanding, Mithya is not an addition to whatever is Satyam. The clay, the pot, is not an addition to the clay. There's no second thing there, you know? And so when there's no second thing, if the second thing as though comes, it as though goes. Because what is actually, that's where they use this word eva. the pot as though comes into being and as though goes out of being, because actually what actually is hasn't come into being or gone out of being. So here, there's no change in terms of being, and that being is me. You can discern right now, as you get this viveka, right now, you are not doing anything. You're not seeing anything. You know, it's there's even a verse in the Gita, seeing, I'm not seeing, hearing, I'm not hearing, talking, I'm not talking, walking, I'm not walking, blinking, I'm not blinking, thinking, I'm not thinking, just because it's a long verse of a string of these things. You know, because you need the upadis, though the upadis, the body, the mind, the sense organs, are doing these things, and they have you for their being, because they're mitya. So you're both doing and not doing. So right now you can make the viveka, that discrimination. I'm talking to you right now, and I'm not talking.
Mm.
You can recognize both. From the standpoint of your being, you're not doing anything.
But I it seems to me that I'm aware of you talking. There's consciousness of
talking. Yeah, you're aware of me talking through your ears and the mind that is having an antikarana vritti, a thought modification, of the data that's coming in through your sense organs. And so, yes, your mind with sense organs are aware of me talking. But if you didn't have any ears and you didn't have any eyes, you would not be aware of me talking. Because you wouldn't have your eyes to see my mouth moving, you know, and you wouldn't have your ears to hear me talking.
So the buddhi can be aware of consciousness in some way. I mean, that's what this is all about, right? But then consciousness is not aware of anything.
Consciousness is the awareness which the buddhi enjoys. So the consciousness is the very self of the buddhi, right? The buddhi can talk about that, right? But the consciousness, while the buddhi is talking about it, the consciousness isn't talking about it. It just is the self which the buddhi is talking about.
And the buddhi is subtler than the mind.
If we break the mind up, yeah, the buddhi is subtler than the manas, because the buddhi is aware and can control the manas. The manas is the fluctuating thoughts, also the emotions are in the manas, so the buddhi can talk to, control, you know, impact the manas. So it's interior to the manas. The manas can also, when it's emotion, can also overwhelm the buddhi. You know? But the buddhi is the one that's really aware of that and takes action on that. So we say, for making that division, we say the buddhi is more subtle than the manas. But both are mind.
And then the Atma could be sattvic?
Well, what I said, you know, if we say the three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas, the sattva is what reflects consciousness in maya, the rajas is the active principle, the tamas is what goes through this fivefold division to become physical name and form. So maya itself is made of these three qualities, sattva, rajas, and tamas. So your mind and sense organs would be sattva. The prana, the vital force, would be rajas. You know, the organs of action would be rajas. The physical body would be tamas. Like that. Name and form is tamas. So when we're talking about you as a jiva, it's because of having a mind and sense organs that you have this subject-object relationship with the world. Without the mind and sense organs, this subject-object relationship would not be there. For Ishwara, the sattva is what runs through the whole creation that allows the creation to be known. The rajas is, you know, the thread of the activity principle that runs through the whole creation. Because the whole creation is active. It's subject to change, continual change. The tamas is all the name and form in the creation. So these are just like the three strands of maya. So from the standpoint of Ishwara, the whole creation is known. And that to understand this really, you have to, even if this is true in your own experience, it is known, there, and really, there's not a knower. If we analyze, it's just known. The knownness is the nature of consciousness is known. Now for you also, there's no knower. There's only knownness. Your perceptions are known. Your emotions are known. Your thoughts are known. The ahankara is known. The whole thing is known. But if we stop at any given point from the standpoint of the upadhi, conditioning adjunct is upadhi, my eyes are the seer, so we can say seer is knower, right? Are the seer of form. The ears, but you can say a different language. I say my eyes are the seer, but actually they're the instrument for seeing. The eyes are an instrument for seeing. Whatever is seen is known. Right?
And what sees?
Well, if you want to look in terms of an instrument, the eyes see, the ears hear, the mind thinks.
What are they an instrument of?
There's a perceptual instrument, and the instrument and the sense organs are the perceptual instruments of the sense objects, and the mind that they call antakarana is the inner instrument into which all of these perceptions come. And so when those perceptions come in, then that mind has four basic types of functions of its own. One function is the function that relates all sense perception. It's like the receptacle of the five sense organs. That's what the mind does in reference to the five sense organs. What it does by itself, from its own standpoint, it has memory, it has the fluctuating mind and emotion, it has the ahankara, the I notion, it has the buddhi, the intellect. Decisive thinking, clarity of thought is the buddhi. Manas is vacillating thought, and emotions are put in the manas. Chitta is the memory. The ahankara is the I notion. This is the thing, capacities of the antakarana on its own. And in addition to that, it's the receptacle for perception. And so I can say, if I say, I am a thinker. Okay, say it. I say that. I am a thinker. What's happening there is the ahankara, the I notion, is identifying my being, conscious being, with the activity that is taking place in the mind. Right? Now, from the mitya side of it, the mind, which thinks or feels or experiences, right, that mind is me. Satya mitya. Who is the self of the mind? Consciousness. Right? But thinking, seeing, all these, say the thinking, or the memory, or even the I thought, all of that is dependent on the mind. Those are qualities of the mind. They belong to the mind. Right? The self of the mind is conscious being. But conscious being doesn't go through any modifications or changes. The mind goes through changes and modifications. So who is thinking? The mind is thinking. Well, is the mind myself? Yeah, the mind is myself. Satya mitya. But that's why I can say, thinking, I don't think. From the standpoint of the mind, I'm thinking. From the standpoint of consciousness, I'm not going through any modification whatsoever. Hearing, right? I'm not hearing. Hearing, from the standpoint of the ears, which are myself, just like the pot is the clay, there is hearing. From the standpoint of consciousness, there's no hearing. There's just conscious being, me. So you can actually differentiate these two. You can differentiate yourself from the standpoint of the upadhi and yourself from its own standpoint. There's no really separation. You know, the mind enjoys you completely because satya mitya, but you are completely free of the mind.
What do you mean separate from its own? What do you mean by separate the self from its own standpoint? So you can separate it from the standpoint of the upadhi and from its own standpoint. I think you just said that.
I didn't mean to say that. Okay. What I was saying is that, okay, say the mind is thinking. Mm-hmm. Well, if you say the self is thinking, that's true from the standpoint of the mind. Mm-hmm. The mind is mitya.
Okay.
So it doesn't have any separation or being apart from the self.
Right.
And so the mind, because I take, see, this is the problem. I'm a jnani if I can say the mind and body and sense organs are me, but I am free of them. The ajnani says the body, mind, sense organs are me, and I am the body, mind, sense organs. There's a that's the anvaya vyatireka. You know, when this is, that is. When this is not, that is not. This body is me, and when this body dies, I die. Satya mitya is different. When this is, that is. When this goes away, that is not. So if I say, that can apply to other things also, but it applies also to satya mitya. So with satya mitya, it's this body is me. That's correct. This mind is me. Correct. These emotions are me. Correct. But I am free of them. So I am their being, their adhishtana. But I myself don't go through any change. That's why when you have, for somebody who knows, when you have an emotion or a thought, good or bad, it doesn't, I'm not even making it valid, good thoughts, bad thoughts, good experiences, bad experiences, I am the changeless self that is the self, very self of those experiences. The thing is that those experiences are taking place, the mitya. Nothing is happening to me. That's the satya-mitya relationship.
This leads me to a question that came up earlier in the verse, when it said that I can, you know, I have a grasp of I am the mind and I am free of the mind.
Yeah.
And there's one self in all beings that's the same self. I struggle with seeing that. I struggle with that because, you know, when I see another person.
You struggle with it because you're seeing.
Huh?
See, as long as you're looking into duality, then that's not the case. If I look at you, obviously your body is not my body.
Yeah.
Your sense organs aren't my sense organs. Your mind is not my mind.
No.
And I can't see yourself because the self is not objectifiable. So I have to know, I have to understand that this me, the being that I am, is the being that you are. It's not that I'm looking at it.
And then what do you do with that other body you're looking at? I mean,
that's all Ishvara. All duality is Ishvara, right? When I look at you, I know who you are because I know who I am. And I know that your being is me. Because I understand that I can't have another experience of the self. There's only one experience of the self. Because your self is not objectifiable for there to be two experiences. You are the self. And so when you do a viveka between your being and your experiences and you recognize yourself as not something that's an objectifiable object in the creation, I recognize that, you recognize that, you recognize that, then what is going to differentiate my being from your being?
There won't be any.
Right. Now, how is it that I know you then? Not because I'm looking at you. How do I know yourself? Because yourself is myself.
Mm.
So if you know yourself, you know myself because there's only one self.
Mm.
You're not going to know that by trying to look in deep into my eyes.
So that's how you, yeah. So that's how you see oneself in all beings is by knowing yourself,
and with
that recognition makes it so that you know the self of the other.
Right, because the self of the other is me.
Okay.
And to live like that, Radha, that's called Brahmanishta.
The Brahmanishta, what Brahmanishta means is that the knowledge as a whole, the whole knowledge, which is basically I am Ishvara, and everything that's entailed in really understanding that, when that clarity is not shakable, you know, I have clarity that there's no vagueness, no doubt anywhere. I see it clearly, I am that. That's Brahmanishta.
And then you would see naturally that you are everything.
Yes, because yourself is, it's not like you're seeing, now there's Satchitananda, there's Satchitananda. In a way you do see that, because actually there's nothing there, but you're not trying to nothing else there, but you're not trying to objectify it with your eyes. With my eyes, I'm seeing, you know, the little thingy there, the backjack. Looking at the backjack, I'm seeing the backjack. But I am present in that perception. The non-objectifiable satchit is present in every perception, in every experience. And I've differentiated that. The satchit that is present in all experience from the nama-rupa. And that the satchit is me. It's not something else. It's not, satchit is non-objectifiable. It's just self-evident. The self-evident me. And you can't have an experience that's separate from that. So what about when you're having all these experiences, the viveka is there between your being and the nama-rupas, the names and forms. The maya. You know, the changing maya. That has your being as its adhishtana. Is that adhishtana word known? Do you recognize that yet? Okay, because that's an important word. If we can use that word, it's nice.
That is what is changeless. I mean, isn't that...
Totally changeless. You are always the same. Always. It's not... And that's an important thing, too, because we've been so conditioned. Even when you think of enlightenment, I'm supposed to have this big bliss vritti, you know? You are the ananda that they're talking about. Mm-hmm. That is a wonderful recognition. When they say ananda, they're not talking about a bliss vritti. They're talking about the wholeness, the beloved nature of your own being, mm-hmm. of you that is here right now, that is present in a bliss vritti and pleasant in a dukkha vritti. Always present. No matter what you're thinking, what you're doing. It's not that we want to have, you know, upset thoughts or anything, but the beauty is that if you have an upset thought, your being is totally present to it, and the mind learns how to just take a bath, to rest in your being.
And that belovedness is self-evident, or it announces itself?
It is absolutely self-evident once you recognize it, but it takes a while to recognize it because you think of, we're thinking of bliss, mm-hmm. rather than that you, there is no more, nothing more precious to you than you. So then when you think, what is it? What am I talking about when I say that? What is it that is so, so precious? And it's your very being, and you don't want to lose that.
Tonight's the first time that I heard you, I'm sure you said it plenty of times, but the first time I heard you, sustainer being used as adhishtana. Because you kind of think of the sustainer as something that, you know, is grinding out, sustaining the universe.
Yeah, to recognize it as adhishtana is really beautiful. Yeah.
If you have time for one more. If the self doesn't see, why is it called consciousness?
Because consciousness is not consciousness of something. It's just self-evident being. Because it's luminous. Like, say if I get rid of the whole creation, the satchit still remains. Consciousness still remains. So it's self-evident. This is normal. We only think of consciousness in terms of consciousness of something. We don't think of consciousness per se, in and of itself, without the upadis, without the sense organs, without the mind. The subject-object relationships are because of sense organs and mind. You know, that's what allows for the experience of duality. But if you take those away, then there's just conscious being, which is not conscious, not performing an act of being conscious of anything, but is that because of which all things are known. It itself isn't doing anything to be conscious of anything. But from the standpoint of the maya, everything is known. You have to be careful also. This one tricky thing here is that you can think of maya as its kind of its own thing. You know, maya is having the experiences, not me. But the maya is me. It's just I am free of it. That's what's important to understand. Otherwise you think, Maya's having all the fun, Maya's having all the experiences, and just consciousness isn't doing anything. Well, whenever there's any experience there, the self of that experience is consciousness. But consciousness from its own standpoint is a completed state. It's a non-dual, just conscious being. Maya has no other being apart from consciousness. This is the Satyam Mitya.
To be continued.
To be continued. Yeah. Always nice to continue anyway.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.